TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Gabe Brown's Ranch in North Dakota. Interview by Jesse Frost on the No-Till Growers podcast. On May 4, 2020, Jesse Frost had a farmer-to-farmer conversation with Gabe Brown. In the current emergency that is caused by climate change and the coronavirus pandemic, a movement among farmers brings inspiration and hope to those who are looking for healthy food and techniques of farming without chemicals. Instead of adding to carbon dioxide pollution by industrial farming and animal raising techniques, farmers like Gabe Brown and Jesse Frost are exploring ways of actually bringing carbon dioxide down from the air back into the soil. Every year, the Food and Agriculture Organization in the United Nations is celebrating World Soil Day on December 5. In 2020, their message is especially urgent. Soil erosion must be stopped to save our future. Approximately 75 billion tons of topsoil are lost each year from global agriculture production. In this context, no-till agriculture has become an inspiration. It is a method practiced in most indigenous cultures and was reintroduced to industrial societies in the 1940s. In 1990, approximately 6% of the farmland in America was being farmed using no-till practices. By 2016, the percentage had risen to 35%. No-till agriculture is one of the important tools of regenerative agriculture. Jesse Frost invited the North Dakota farmer Gabe Brown for a conversation on his No-Till Growers podcast. In the early 1990s, a series of weather-related crop disasters put Gabe Brown and his wife Shelley in desperate financial straits. In an effort to simply survive, he began experimenting with new practices he'd learned about from reading and talking with researchers and ranchers. And he and his family found themselves on an amazing journey into a new type of farming. Here's Jesse Frost.
Super excited to bring you today's interview with Gabe Brown of Brown's Ranch in North Dakota, where his home farm, now run by his son and his son's fiance, is 5,000 acres. Much of that is in crop ground and pasture, with about 15 acres in no-till vegetables. And we kind of dive into all of it. What's used to manage that amount of land, how the products are distributed, some technical details on incorporating animals, and a whole lot else. It's definitely a different scale of agriculture than I've largely reported on here, but it's also all very familiar. The cover cropping, the soil management, the photosynthesis, all of it. All right, enough from me. Let's get into this amazing interview with Gabe Brown of Brown's Ranch. Gabe Brown, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be with you today.
And good to have you. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your farm. Where are you located? How much acreage you're working with there?
Okay. Brown's Ranch is located right next to the city of Bismarck in North Dakota. Ranch consists of about 5,000 acres. Of that, we have approximately 3,000 acres of grazing land, both native pastures and land that we've seeded, cropland that we've seeded back to pasture. And then we also have approximately 2,000 acres of cropland. And we grow a wide array of different cash crops, everything from corn and spring wheat, barley, oats, winter triticale, hairy vetch. And we do put in about 15 acres of vegetables each year also.
When you say 5,000 acres, is that a typical size for that area?
For our area, it is pretty much just an average size farmer ranch. I have one neighbor, for instance, who farms 40,000 cropland acres. A small farm in this area would be around 2,000 acres. It would be a bit difficult for someone to make a living if they were selling into the quote-unquote conventional market with 2,000 acres.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit more about both the 15-acre sort of vegetable plot, but also that 3,000 acres that you have in sort of the corn and those different crops.
Sure. It's about 2,000 acres of cropland that we have, and those 2,000 acres are farmed 100% zero-till. We have not tilled the soil since 1993, so we're a long time down the no-till path. We do not have a set crop rotation. Instead, we are very adaptive according to conditions, whether it be moisture, which is somewhat limiting in our environment. We get about 16 inches of total precipitation a year. Approximately 10 to 12 inches falls as rain, and then the remainder of it comes in the form of snow. And our crop rotation varies. We will actually no-till right into the previous year's residue that we leave on the soil surface in order to cover and protect the soil from wind erosion, water erosion, evaporation, and it also inhibits weeds from growing. We use very little chemical. Most of these 2,000 acres have not seen any chemical in 7 years. We use no synthetic fertilizer, no pesticides, no fungicides. We do integrate livestock onto the cropland. Once we grow that cash crop and harvest the cash crop for grain, then we will no-till in a cover crop. Realize that we only have about 110 frost-free days each year here, so our growing season is very short. However, these cover crops we seed will be frost-tolerant cover crops. In other words, they can withstand the frost and keep growing. That allows us to extend the time that we're able to take elements out of the atmosphere and through photosynthesis convert them into all these carbon compounds that go to feed soil life and enhance the ecosystem.
All right. So with that 2,000 acres, like, what was the setup process to get that into something that you could no-till? Or did you just start drilling seeds into whatever was already existing there? What's the sort of history with setting that up?
The ranch we're on was farmed by my in-laws for 35 years, and they practiced heavy tillage. You know, they plowed or disced the field numerous times before and after the cash crops. And I had just read enough and learned enough to realize that that was detrimental to soil health, and that I would be better off if I would quit tilling. And so in order to do that, I simply sold my tillage equipment and bought a no-till drill and started no-tilling, and we haven't looked back. So it's not a difficult process to do. I don't care if we're talking the size of a garden or thousands of acres. You just have to quit tilling. The most difficult process is convincing yourself and learning that tillage is actually detrimental to soil health and to the quality of the products that are grown there.
Right. And since you've done that, have you seen the quality of your products go up? I mean, is it more consistent, less disease?
Yes, all of the above. What really happens is the first thing, you're starting to repair soil structure. And we need to learn about soil function in order to understand this. So soil is based on soil aggregates. If you look at your soil, it should look like a dark, rich chocolate cake. It should have all these little crumbs, or what we call aggregates. Well, those aggregates are really sand, silt, and clay particles that are bound together by carbon compounds. And those soil aggregates will only last about 4 weeks. After that time, they're consumed by biology, consumes the glues that hold them together, and then new ones need to be formed. Now, if you till, you're gonna destroy that. You're gonna destroy those soil aggregates. Well, then you need to understand that biology lives in and on thin films of water surrounding those soil aggregates. And it's biology, of course, that makes the nutrients available to the plants. So that's the start of the nutrient cycle. So anytime we till the soil, we're destroying the home for that biology. And if there's not that home for biology, then the plants are going to be less healthy. So as we quit tilling and soil health improves, then that biology improves and proliferates. That provides more nutrients for the plant. A healthier plant is going to be less prone to diseases, to pest infestations. And that's one of the reasons that we no longer need to use those pesticides and those fungicides and those herbicides on our cropland and on our garden, for that matter, also. Our garden has been no-till for 20-plus years also.
Okay, so, yeah, I often equate, like, the sort of carbon cycle to eating. We can't just eat one sandwich and be good for life. And I think that's kind of how the soil works, too, right? You have to constantly be putting carbon into it and expecting some of that carbon to be respired out. And so you feel like cover crops have been one of your best approaches for doing that.
Cover crops with animal integration. It realized we need to look at our garden or our farm or our ranch as an ecosystem, because it is an ecosystem and it takes everything in order to make that a healthy ecosystem. And we also need to realize that I'll use this analogy. Say if you have a tomato plant, okay, and that plant grows up, you have the vines, you cut that plant off and dry it out. What's left there in that plant is approximately 97% of what's left there is carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen. Those four elements. Well, what do those four elements have in common? They're found in the air. So our goal as a gardener, a farmer, a rancher, is to take those elements out of the atmosphere, and we do that via growing plants. Through photosynthesis, they're able to take those elements out of the atmosphere, put them into the soil or into themselves in order to keep these elements cycling. So that's our whole goal, whether it be with cover crops or cash crops, vegetables, which are cash crops also, is to take those elements out of the atmosphere, put them into the cycle, and that drives the production system.
And one of the things you're known for is having pretty diverse mixes of cover crops when you're doing this as well. Have you kind of nailed down the mixes that you like, or do you still kind of go with as many different crops as possible?
We use nature as our template. If you look at a truly healthy native ecosystem, walk out into a healthy prairie or into a healthy forest, you will see that it's very, very diverse. There's not just one plant species out there. There's dozens upon dozens of different species. Now, obviously, in gardening or farming, you're not going to be able to purchase and seed 100 different species. But we can certainly seed 10 to 20 different species. And what that does is each plant has the ability to send off different amounts and different types of root exudates to attract different biology to cycle nutrients. So the more diversity you have, the healthier your soil's going to become. Now, what I've done over the years is I know which species grow best in my environment. So we tend to use mixes that we've proven over time work in our environment. And every environment is a little different. The principles I'm sharing with you will work in any environment because they're simply the principles of nature. The species we use will vary. Obviously, where I am in North Dakota, you know, I'm not going to grow tropical plants here in North Dakota. You know, we have to put it in what we call context for our environment. And sometimes it just takes trial and error to find out what works best in your own environment.
Right. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about the different crops that you grow and how you distribute them. In general, you're not just growing your typical sort of commodity crops, right? I mean, what are some of the crops that you're producing there? And what is the sort of sales and distribution of those crops look like?
Sure. So we grow a wide variety of different cash crops. We grow corn and spring wheat and barley and oats and winter triticale and cereal rye and hairy vetch. What we like to do is add value to those. And how we add value is marketing many of those crops as seed, for instance, or as feed. We don't use any genetically modified organisms. And so we have a market for that. A lot of people who are buying feed from us, grains for feed, they don't want to feed their livestock any grains from genetically modified plants. And so that's adding value to us. And so we'll harvest the crops. We will clean the seed. By that, I mean take out any straw, chaff, or broken kernels, any weed seeds, and then we'll market it as seed or as feed. And that adds value.
Okay, a little bit back to the management practices. So just thinking about some of these crops, what does the termination of the previous crop look like before you drill the next crop, the cash crop?
Sure. So I always say that every location around the world has its unfair advantage. What does your location and environment allow you to do that it may not in others? Well, in North Dakota, one of our unfair advantages is we get winter. Winter will kill about anything up here in North Dakota. So the cover crop that we grow the previous year, that will be terminated by winter, by the freezing temperatures. In the spring, what you find then, due to the amount of snow we get, that cover crop, and plus the fact that we often graze those cover crops with livestock, any remaining residue will be down on the soil surface, and that's where we want it. We want it to be down on the soil surface to protect the soil and to feed soil macro and microbiology. Well, we're able with our equipment, our no-till equipment, to seed directly into that residue. And that provides the protection. It also helps keep temperatures cooler in the summer because that soil is covered with that residue. So we use winter to our advantage to be able to seed into that residue.
Yeah, that's great. I sometimes wish we had more winters. This year, our oats didn't even winter kill. So that was kind of, that's been problematic for the spring so far. But I appreciate your positive spin on that of thinking of what our unfair advantage is. I'm not sure what Kentucky's is yet, but maybe it's our rainfall.
Let me just, if I may, just expand on that for a moment. Okay, you said that your oats did not winter kill. Okay, in my environment, if I had that happen, and the oats did not winter kill, I would just use the oats then for the next cash crop. See, one of the things in regenerative agriculture that we really tout is the ability to be adaptive. So nature's going to throw you a curveball, so to speak, from time to time. Take advantage of that and just use it as a positive. So what would Gabe do if he was in Kentucky and had oats growing? Well, I would put livestock on it, grazing it, if I was able to, you know. You take lemons and make lemonade, so to speak.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, I think about you being up in North Dakota with probably a lot of farmers who don't necessarily farm like you and don't necessarily think like that.
How does your sort of farming practices, how do they resonate locally?
Well, I tell people this. Back in 1994, when I started no-tilling, I believe I was the first 100% no-tiller in the county. I was the first farmer in our county to go 100% no-till. Now today, 75 to 80% of the cropland in Burley County, North Dakota is no-tilled. So as a rule, no-till has been adopted. Now, there's not many farmers who grow the diversity of cash and cover crops I do, but there's some, and it's catching on. You know how it is, sometimes the last people to change are the neighbors. You know, they don't want to admit that a neighbor of theirs might be doing something right, but you just kind of got to educate those who want to be educated and realize that's up to the individual. You know, I'm not going to try and force what I do and my practices on anyone. In saying that, there's a real surge in demand for the educational aspect of regenerative ag and these practices. And we're seeing more and more people all over the world using these regenerative practices.
Okay, so maybe let's get into the vegetable production. 15 acres, what kind of vegetables are you producing? And are they wholesale vegetables, or are you doing some sort of farmers market, sort of retail, local sales with those as well?
Right. So we grow a wide array of different vegetables. Almost all are heirloom varieties. Just like the grains we grow, we try and source our seed, much of our seed for our grains, I should have mentioned. We propagate ourselves and have kept the seed back for 20 plus years. Okay, so it's highly adapted to our environment. Well, the vegetables also, we prefer the older heirloom varieties. We grow all kinds of vegetables, everything from sweet corn and green beans and peas and pumpkins and cantaloupe and watermelon and tomatoes and peppers and spinach and lettuce, and the list goes on. We grow these no-till. What we're doing on the larger scale, we have permanent gardens that every year, you know, it's been a garden for 20 plus years. But then we also do 10 to 15 acres normally of vegetable production. And we do that right out in our larger cropland fields. We prepare that the year before by growing a diverse cover crop mix, allowing the livestock to graze that in the late fall, early winter, and making sure that they don't overgraze it. We're leaving plenty of residue, normally 2 to 3 inches of residue on the soil surface in the spring. And then we're able to no-till in there our vegetables the following spring. And how we'll do that, we have a monosem planter that's able to singulate the seed. The rows are set up on a 30-inch spacing. So we will go in and, for instance, we will plant our sweet corn on 30-inch rows, and then we'll come back and offset 15 inches and then plant, for instance, green beans in one hopper and peas in another. So what you have is you have a row of sweet corn growing, and then 15 inches on one side of it will be a row of green beans, 15 inches on the other side. A row of peas, for instance. That way, when we harvest them, and we're harvesting all this by hand, the rows will be monoculture. So you can just walk down the row of corn and harvest sweet corn, or you walk down the row of peas and harvest the peas. But we're getting the synergies that occur between plants. That benefit coming because we have the diversity in the larger field.
Right. That's great. Okay. So you're, just so I have it, you're basically doing very similar to what you do with the cash crop section. You're setting it up with the cover crop the year before, and then the next year, you're presumably going into what has been the same way, where the winter kills all that cover crop, so you have kind of a blank slate. and then you're drilling into that. Would that be accurate?
That is accurate. Yes. Yes, that is accurate.
Are you doing any transplants, like, you know, with the watermelons and that sort of stuff, or is all that direct seeded as well?
The watermelons, cantaloupe, pumpkins, those type of things are direct seeded. We do transplants of tomatoes, peppers, more of those crops that take a little long for our environment to start from seed. And the transplants are only put in our permanent gardens. You know, the large scale areas are left for species that we can plant from seed.
Oh, okay. You kind of rotate that 15 acre vegetable plot?
We do. That gets rotated anywhere on the farm. Typically, it's a bit near the farmstead just for ease of getting to it for harvest. And you had asked the question about how do we market these? So besides our vegetables, we raise grass-finished beef. We raise grass-finished lamb, pastured pork. We have 1,400 laying hens out on pasture, so we sell eggs. We do broilers, both chickens and also some turkeys. And we market all these products directly to consumers, primarily via a website. And people can go on our website and there's a shopping cart on there. They can shop online. They pay for it with a credit card online. And then they have the option. We can ship it directly to their door. Or we do deliveries to cities throughout North Dakota once a month. And so they can come to our drop-off points and pick the products up there. Right now, we have about 8,000 customers that are buying from us at various rates. Some of them purchase every month. Some purchase just larger quantities several times per year. But it's how we market the vegetables also. During the summer, we'll set up at a farmer's market and we'll be selling our proteins and our vegetables at the farmer's market, but people can also come and pick up the products that they ordered online from us. And so our goal is to sell the products as local as we can. Realize North Dakota, there's only 730,000 people in the whole state. So our idea of local right now is the state of North Dakota.
That was the first half of an interview with farmer Gabe Brown. He had been invited to this no-till market garden podcast by Kentucky farmer Jesse Frost. In addition to off-grid farming, Jesse practices cooking and journalism. Gabe Brown writes about the family farm. We have now eliminated the use of synthetic fertilizers, fungicides, and pesticides. We use minimal herbicide and are striving to eliminate it. We do not use GMOs or glyphosate, aka Roundup. Come back when TUC Radio returns for the conclusion of this conversation. My name is Maria Glöden. Thank you for listening.